As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Tuesday, April 27th, 2010. I would now like to turn the call over to Matt Ginter, Vice President of Investor Relations at 3M.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our first quarter earnings call and business review. Before we address this quarter's results, I wanted to mention two upcoming events. First is our upcoming plant tour and consumer and office business review, scheduled for the morning of June 29th at our Post-it Note manufacturing facility in Cynthiana, Kentucky. A formal invite will be sent out shortly. In the meantime, please hold the date. Also, as I mentioned on the January earnings call, we have set aside the morning of Tuesday, December 7th for our annual Outlook meeting in New York City. Complete details regarding timing and location will be available later this year. Before I turn things over to George, please take a moment to read the forward-looking statement on slide 2. During today's conference call, we will make certain predictive statements that reflect our current views about our future performance and financial results. Those statements are based on certain assumptions and expectations of future events that are subject to risks and uncertainties. Item 1A of our most recent Form 10-K lists some of the most important risk factors that could cause actual results to differ from our predictions. So let's begin today's review. Turn to slide number 3, and I'll turn it over to George.
Thank you very much, Matt, and good morning, everybody. By now, you've all seen the numbers, and we hope that investors are happy with our progress in the first quarter. And last quarter, I told you that I'd never been more confident in our growth prospects, and the first quarter is Exhibit A, shall we call it, in just the reason why we feel that way. It was a spectacular quarter from any point of view, and especially gratifying as an affirmation of both our strategic direction and of the implementation of our plan. A few highlights, if I may, please. Sales rose by 25% in the quarter. This was the largest single percentage quarterly increase in any memory or record year, with organic volume improvement of over 19%. Adjusting for special items, in this case, Medicare Part D, earnings were $1.40 per share, an all-time 3M record for the first quarter. We maintained our best-in-class margins at 22.8%, up 700 basis points year-on-year. I can think of no better way to refute some of the collapsing margin doubting Thomases out there. The strong performance was across the board. All of our businesses posted double-digit sales growth, along with 20% plus operating income margins. And some, like display and graphics, electro and communications, and industrial and transportation, were particularly outstanding. Geographically, sales growth was strongest in emerging economies, where sales expanded by 47% versus the first quarter of 2009, with China posting a huge volume gain of 63%, Korea 74%, and Taiwan a whopping 88% gain. The momentum built as the quarter unfolded, and in March we had 16 countries across the world where the sales growth was 50% or better. Yes, 16 countries. Korea and Taiwan were over 75% in March, and these are not small businesses. The United States was no slouch either in this growth race. Sales were up over 11% in the quarter and up 18% in March. This was all done even while we committed to accelerate R&D spend this year by about another $100 million. Over the next 2 years, there's no doubt in our mind that this additional spend is going to accelerate our growth rate substantially. It's a proven formula for us, and we intend to ride it. Of course, a quarter like this raises a number of key questions. First, why do we see such magnificent growth in the quarter? Where is it coming from, and what does it mean for this year and the years beyond? And second, why do we feel confident in raising our guidance by 50 cents on both the low end and high ends of the range, which is a very healthy increase only 3 months into the year? We've seen improving numbers in most company earnings reports so far this quarter, with high growth rates in Asia. So that part of it is no surprise to anyone. But this quarter's growth rate exceeds any conventional market expansion explanation that we have. Let me take you through our best thinking about where the 25% sales increase came from, understanding that in a company like ours, with so many moving parts and markets, precision is always an elusive animal to apprehend. Here's what we know with reasonable certainty. Acquisitions, net of divestitures added 0.3%, pricing in aggregate added 0.2%, and currency translation added 5 percentage points. The remainder, of course, is a super organic growth number of over 19%. I'd like now to try to help you understand where the growth came from. So we'll spend a minute or two analysing the 19% jump. With our segment and geographic breakdown, you know we're neither a wholly IPI nor a wholly GDP company, though we have elements of both in our mix. To a rough approximation, $6 billion of our annual sales are worldwide GDP dependent, $11.5 billion are worldwide IPI dependent, $3.6 billion are Asia IPI, and $5 billion are US GDP. When we use the Global Insight forecast numbers on slide 3, we get a blended custom market index of about 7.2%, pretty close to the 7.3% worldwide IPI number for the quarter. So that explains 7.2% of the demand in end market growth, leaving 12% still to be explained. A somewhat squishy number is inventory restocking. Some commentaries from our industrial peers suggest that this part of the growth dynamic is over, though for us we're not sure we ever saw it get started. Moreover, quite a few of our supply chains, consumer electronics in particular, and automotive too for that matter, have little or no channel inventory to speak of, so they are not really a factor in volume driven by supply chain transients. In the US, if you look at the Census Bureau data on inventories, they haven't moved up a lot. March data showed US inventories moving up by less than 1% year over year. Historically, on small perturbation sales transients, which this 1% factor is, we see the sales results magnified in the channel by a 3x factor. So we would expect some of our US sales to be impacted by this condition. Given our roughly one-third mix of US sales, arithmetically it would explain about 1% of the quarter's sales growth, but to be ultra conservative, I'm going to extend it globally and say it amounted to the same total worldwide. That would explain 3% of the growth, with 9% still to be explained. Another factor is new products. We've done our level best to drive this element of growth, knowing full well it's the best source of value creation. Our new product vitality index is running close to 30% on a 5-year basis, headed to 40% at the end of the planning period. Offsetting this, we usually use an estimate of 2 to 3% erosion and cannibalization annually. But I think our manage the pyramid strategy may have eased that erosion a bit. Of course, it's difficult to discern the difference between penetration from new products and market share gains. They aren't exactly mutually exclusive concepts. But our best estimates point to a new product gain of 3 to 4% of this sales growth. That leaves 4 or 5 points of additional growth in the quarter to be explained. And that leads to the inescapable conclusion that we're taking market share. Now, as an engineer, I was trained never to determine a small number from the difference in two large numbers, but it's as good as we can get right now. And candidly, I think we also gained significant share in the fourth quarter too. To support that view, look at what three indicators alone are telling us about sales in some key markets. First, in automotive, for example, worldwide auto builds were up 39% in Q1. In comparison, our unit growth for the quarter was up 67%, well in excess of the auto build proxy. Second, if we use Intel's Q1 logic and chipset unit growth as a proxy for sales growth in the consumer electronics industry, volume was up year over year by 44%, with average selling price about flat. Correspondingly, Gartner also reported PC shipments in Q1 were up 27%. In contrast, our electronics-related businesses grew at about 85% for the quarter and was very broad-based, not just LCD TVs. Again, while this is not an accurate scientific comparison, it is a leading indicator of significant penetration. Third, in consumer, same-store sales in the US naturally varied widely. But the best performing companies grew same-store sales by 2 to 4%, though others were negative. We grew volumes in the quarter by nearly 11%, very impressive when compared with same-store performance of big box outlets in the United States. Global GDP was up only 3%. So to my mind, this was great execution of the plan by 3M people, but also because of the vibrancy of our new technologies and products. I'll give you a few examples quickly of how the plan is working, especially as it relates to growing our core, new products, and manage the pyramid more effectively. Example number one is how an acquisition, Nylonge, enabled the home care division to realize an increase in sales of 20% year over year by driving up the pyramid with branded products. And this is one of our mature core businesses, scouring products. Second, our venture into renewable energy demonstrates our resolve not to back off investing in the future. We formed this division in January of 2009 during the darkest days of the recession. Essentially, it's about bringing together technologies and products from all across 3M to address nearly every facet of renewable energy components. Solar mirrors, for example, are showing terrific growth, and sales in renewable energy are up 72% in the first quarter. We built a new coating line in Singapore for this business, which we opened last September, and it's already sold out. We're working on the next one as we speak. Third, the electron communications business is another example of 3M staying the course on investments in the future. Products in this business include a hugely successful optically clear adhesive for use in touchscreen applications, Novec fluids, and carrier tapes. ECB sales were up 39% in Q1. Fourth, an example of reinvigorating our core, industrial adhesives and tape division is playing much more broadly across the entire product spectrum, and its growth in Q1 of 31% was impressive. And the long line of new inventions continues, with a new tape product that includes the holy grail of adhesives. It will stick to an oily surface, believe it or not. So in summary, it was a great quarter, well ahead of any market trends, and probably with a good share penetration gain element to it. So I'll now turn the call over to Pat, and he'll give you some details on the quarter.
Thanks, George, and good morning, everyone. Please turn to slide number 4. On a GAAP reported basis, first quarter earnings were $1.29 per share, a healthy 74% increase over the first quarter of 2009. Included in that result was a one-time non-cash income tax charge of $84 million, or 11 cents a share, resulting from the Medicare Part D changes embedded in the recently enacted Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act here in the U.S. Our prior earnings expectations from the January earnings call were based upon the tax law in effect as of the date and therefore did not contemplate this change or charge. So excluding this item, earnings were $1.40 per share, which is an all-time record for any first quarter in the company's history, up 89% versus the first quarter of 2009 GAAP earnings per share. Importantly, we achieved this result on less than record sales, as our first quarter sales were still below 2008 levels. So there is no doubt that we are running the company today with a much more competitive cost position. On the whole, our first quarter performance was ahead of our own expectations, so the year is off to a very strong start. Let's examine a few of the details. Please turn to slide number 5. Since the worst of last year's recession, we have now put together a string of outstanding quarters, and the first quarter was the best thus far. First quarter sales increased nearly 25%, and this growth came from virtually every part of the world. Asia Pacific grew 54%, and the combined Latin America-Canada region expanded sales by 26%. European sales grew 15.9%, and growth in the U.S. was 11.6%. We experienced double-digit worldwide sales increases in every business segment, led by display and graphics at 42%, electro and communications at 39%, and industrial and transportation at 29%. Gross profit grew 34% year-on-year. Gross margins rose 3.5 points to 49%. A number of positive factors were at work here, including the 19% growth in organic sales volume, substantially improved factory utilization levels, along with cost savings related to prior year's restructuring actions. Clearly, we are sustaining those gains. Finally, our many Lean Six Sigma teams continue to drive significant yield improvement and cost reduction efforts throughout our factories. As the economy improves, we should see a nice continuous stream of productivity and efficiency gains. SG&A costs increased 11%, which included a 30% increase in advertising and promotion investments to drive future volumes. As a percent of sales, SG&A declined by 260 basis points. We invested $342 million in R&D in the first quarter, a year-on-year increase of 6%. Given how well the business is performing, we recently approved an additional $40 million of investments for the remainder of 2010, spread across a number of businesses to drive new growth programs. These investments will largely impact the SG&A and R&D lines of the income statement. Operating income rose 80% to $1.4 billion, and operating margins were an outstanding 22.8%. The first quarter tax rate was 31.9% on a GAAP basis, which of course includes the charge related to Medicare Part D. Excluding this charge, the tax rate was 26%, which was 4 points better than last year's rate due to a lower international tax rate, along with the resolution of our 2008 U.S. federal tax audit. In light of this, we now expect our full-year tax rate to be at 28% or lower, excluding the impact of the Medicare Part D. It is encouraging to us that our strategy is really beginning to play out in the numbers. Growth is accelerating, costs remain under very good control, and margins and returns remain among the best in class. Sequential P&L highlights are on slide number 6. It is clear that our business is improving quarter by quarter. Sales increased 4% as both our industrial and transportation and electrocommunications businesses posted good sequential improvement across most of the respective operating units. Gross profit rose 6% sequentially, driven largely by stronger factory throughput along with higher sales levels. First quarter raw material costs were flat to slightly higher than the fourth quarter, as we are seeing some uptick in inflation that will begin to affect us in Q2. Both SG&A and R&D costs rose 5% sequentially, partially due to higher stock option expense. You may recall that because we grant stock options in February of each year, our first quarter expense is higher than the fourth quarter. Operating income rose 8% sequentially, despite a 5-point drag from options, and incremental margins were very strong at 46%. Now let's turn to the balance sheet and cash flow. Please turn to slide number 7. I think all of you know that one of our key objectives entering the recession was to focus on cash flow generation and on carefully managing our balance sheet. For example, we kept a close eye on receivable balances and on monitoring the financial condition of our customers in order to optimally manage credit terms. Also, we put extra emphasis on driving higher inventory turns and made it a top priority in our 2009 planning. Now that the business is growing again, we can see that these efforts are really paying off. First quarter free cash flow was $925 million, a record for any first quarter in the company's history, and more than two times that of the prior year. Free cash flow conversion was nearly 100%. Net working capital turns were 5.3 at March month end, a 20% improvement versus March 2009 levels. Inventories rose by 5% year-on-year, a modest jump in a quarter when sales rose 25%. As a result, inventory turns were 4.4, a 10% improvement over the first quarter of 2009. Accounts receivable increased 15% year-on-year, again well below sales growth levels. March sales typically are the highest in the quarter, so it is not unusual to see receivables rise late in the quarter, only to subsequently fall early in the following quarter as payments are remitted. Regardless, accounts receivable turns were a healthy 7.1 in March, up one-half turn versus March of last year. All in all, our working capital is in good shape, and we are well positioned as the economy improves. Capital expenditures for the quarter were $157 million, down $87 million year-on-year. We expect CapEx to accelerate in the remainder of 2010, and our full-year estimate remains in the range of $1 to $1.1 billion. Dividends paid to common shareholders were $374 million in the first quarter, including a per-share increase of 3% in February. This was the 52nd consecutive year of dividend increases for 3M. Now let's review the performance of our business units. Please turn to slide number 8. Industrial and Transportation is our largest segment, representing about one-third of 3M sales, and they had a fabulous performance in the quarter. First quarter sales in the segment grew 29% to $2.1 billion. In local currency terms, sales rose 23.7%, which was almost entirely driven by organic volume. This growth was across the board in the quarter, as most every business in the segment posted double-digit local currency sales growth. Sequential sales increased 6.6% in the first quarter, so the business continues to improve day by day. In addition to the great performance in automotive, renewables, and tapes that George mentioned, we also posted double-digit local currency sales growth in abrasives, aerospace, purification systems, and energy and advanced materials. All in all, industrial transportation's performance this quarter was quite strong and very broad-based. And there's still plenty of upside going forward, as unit volumes are still 10 points below the peak levels that we saw in 2008. Operating income for the quarter was $454 million, an increase of 160%, and margins doubled to nearly 22%. The business has taken out significant structural costs in the past couple of years. Therefore, the operating leverage is quite significant. In the last few years, under H.C. Shin's leadership, industrial and transportation has significantly stepped up its level of customer engagement and new product flow. Examples include our new Cubitron 2, a revolutionary self-sharpening abrasive technology that provides significant productivity advantages to our customers. We're on track to begin mass production of this product in the second half of this year. We also recently introduced Scotchgard anti-graffiti film to protect against vandalism in mass transit and retail spaces. These are only two examples of many. We also received some important customer accolades in the first quarter. Our automotive OEM team received Honda's 2009 Development Award, recognizing technically significant contributions to their manufacturing processes. Honda also recognized our Japanese subsidiary, Sumitomo 3M, for developing an interior film for their upcoming new hybrid car. Honda is an outstanding customer, and we are proud to be recognized by them for our efforts. Our final business development note, our renewable energy business signed a cooperative R&D agreement with the U.S. Department of Energy's National Renewable Energy Laboratory to accelerate a number of clean power projects in order to help meet the nation's carbon-free energy needs. Please turn to slide number 9. Industrial and communications, for the first time in many quarters, was one of our fastest growing businesses. During the worst of the recession, this team has been steadfast in their sales efforts, working bench to bench with our customers to drive future growth opportunities. We are now finding that many of our competitors cut much deeper than we did, and now that business is picking up, there's plenty of demand coming our way. In particular, this provided a boost in many of our optically clear adhesives, Novec fluids, carrier tapes, and wafer processing materials for semiconductor manufacturing. First quarter sales in electrocommunications were $665 million, up 38.6% in U.S. dollars and up 34.3% in local currency. Foreign exchange impacts added 5.3 points to first quarter growth. Growth was once again led by our businesses that supply the consumer electronics and semiconductor industries. They clearly drove most of the growth in Q1. But it's also very encouraging to see double-digit local currency growth in our electrical market businesses, which supplies connectors and other solutions to the power utility, MRO, and appliance markets. On the flip side, our telecom infrastructure business-related businesses held their ground in the market. They remained very sluggish. Electro and communication posted a solid 20.6% operating margin in the first quarter, which is over four times that of last year's first quarter. Much stronger sales and factory utilization were obviously a factor, but I don't want to take anything away from this team's ongoing commitment to productivity, yield improvement, and waste reduction, and the like. They really did a fine job navigating through the recession and are now reaping the rewards of those efforts. On the new business front, we continue to fight much more aggressively for market share in this business. For example, we're driving increased spec-in of 3M components in touch-enabled devices. In semiconductor carrier tapes, we have successfully expanded our product offering to participate more broadly and capture additional growth in consumer electronics, including the LED space. In electrical markets, we have gained substantial share in the North American OEM insulating tape markets by aggressively capitalizing on the exit of a former competitor. The list of similar examples continues to grow. The electrical communications business is off to a strong start in 2010, and we'll look for continued improvement as the year progresses. Please turn to slide 10, where I will review our display and graphics business. Display and graphics also delivered a very strong first quarter. Again, consumer electronics was a key theme, but the performance in D&G continues to broaden out to other businesses as well. First quarter sales were $869 million, up 42% year-on-year. Sales rose 38.4% in local currency, which was entirely organic. Profits more than tripled to $212 million, and operating margins were 24.3%. Factory utilization was much improved versus last year's challenging first quarter, and the business continues to do a tremendous job in reducing cost. First quarter growth was led by our optical film business, where sales doubled year on year. This was a function of both strong end market growth in consumer electronics, particularly LCD TVs, along with a number of important new 3M product solutions for the industry. The LCD TV market is rapidly transitioning to LED lit from traditional CCFL bulb lit technology, and our films are playing a vital role in this transition. Our films are also an important enabler in the ongoing transition to more energy efficient TVs. Of course, product life cycles in this space are quite short, and nobody knows this better than our team, so the leadership is relentlessly focused on next generation solutions for the industry. And we continue to aggressively drive Lean Six Sigma in our optical factories to ensure that we capture all available future sales and profit opportunities. Another sizable business within display and graphics is our traffic safety systems business, which is the leading global supplier of high-performance reflective materials for roadways and construction work zones. Traffic safety systems had a fabulous first quarter with double-digit sales growth and solid profitability. Similar to recent quarters, growth continues to be very good in developing areas of the world where highway infrastructure development continues to accelerate and stimulus spending is making a real positive difference. Growth in the U.S., on the other hand, has been much more modest, as it appears that the legislative focus at the federal and state level is on areas other than highway safety. In recent investor meetings, we have talked quite a bit about broadening our product offering to play bigger across the entire product pyramid. Traffic Safety Systems is one business at 3M that does this very, very well. For the past few years, we have offered films that satisfy customer needs across the entire spectrum. Good, better, and best, if you will. In addition, the team has augmented its global leadership position in films with adjacent offerings in reflective pavement markings, roadway maintenance systems and services, and vehicle registration systems. Traffic Safety Systems remains a very steady performer within display and graphics, which nicely complements the more volatile growth trends that are inherent in consumer electronics. Commercial graphics also had a very solid quarter with double-digit growth and continued sequential sales improvements as the advertising segments that they serve recover from the recession. This business has recently introduced new promotional films to compete more broadly across the product pyramid. Finally, within our newly formed mobile projection systems business, we received some nice accolades for a new 3M 150 pocket projector, which was named an Edison Award finalist in the technology category. Winners are to be announced later this month. Please turn to slide 11. Sales in the consumer and office space rose 15% in the first quarter to $912 million. Local currency sales rose 11%, the majority of which was organic growth. We also had 2.6 points of growth from acquisitions in the quarter. This growth happened throughout consumer and office, as all businesses and geographic regions posted positive local currency growth. As George mentioned, our home care business posted tremendous growth in the quarter. We recently acquired two smaller yet very strategic companies in Latin America to expand our presence in this market. We also drove double-digit local currency growth in the consumer healthcare business, which we've bolstered in the past couple of years with two very important bolt-on acquisitions, Futuro and Ace. We now have a formidable consumer healthcare lineup across the retail landscape. The do-it-yourself business also posted very nice sales growth, driven by our Command adhesives and Scotch Blue painter's tapes. To drive volumes in these and other critical brands, we increased first quarter advertising and merchandising investments by over 40%. And even with its higher investment levels, first quarter profits in consumer and office rose 33% to $219 million, and margins were a healthy 24%. All businesses drove double-digit profit gains in the quarter. Finally, I'd be remiss if I did not mention that 2010 marks the 30th anniversary of the Post-it note. Three decades after its introduction, this category-defining brand continues to grow with a slew of new offerings and adjacent solutions. Please turn to slide 12. In Safety, Security, and Protection Services, sales grew 20.4% in the first quarter. Local currency growth was 14.7%, and currency effects added 5.7% to first quarter sales. As in the past few quarters, the biggest growth driver here was our personal protection business, or more specifically, respiratory products. As a global leader in protective respirators, we have seen significant growth related to H1N1 virus for several quarters running. We estimate that H1N1 related sales were approximately $45 million in the quarter, which is about one half the impact we saw in the fourth quarter, so clearly the impact has begun to wane. On the flip side, the industrial manufacturing sector is picking up, resulting in additional respiratory growth. We expect this transition to continue, which should help us successfully manage the wind down of H1N1 related activity. Elsewhere in Safety, Security, and Protection Services, we saw outstanding growth in the roofing granules business, which we attribute primarily to inventory build at this point. Until we see signs that residential construction and roof replacement activity is fundamentally improving, we'll remain cautious about growth in any one quarter. We also posted solid growth in our building and commercial services business, where we continue to take market share in the area of floor pads and cleaners, including Scotchgard branded floor finishing systems. You can see here on the chart that we had a nice win in the first quarter involving Johns Hopkins Medical Center. First quarter operating profit was $181 million in Safety, Security, and Protection Services, up 46% year-on-year, and margins were 22.4%. Please turn to slide 13 for our final business review, healthcare. Through the worst of last year's recession, we were often reminded of how important it was to have a thriving healthcare business in our portfolio. End markets in this business continue to grow nicely, and generally speaking, those markets are highly stable. First quarter sales in healthcare were $1.1 billion, up 12% in dollars and 7.6% in local currency. Foreign exchange impacts added 4.6% to first quarter sales. Sales increased in most every business within healthcare, led by double-digit currency sales growth in both infection prevention and in skin and wound care. We are seeing good demand in a number of important areas, including skin integrity and advanced wound care. We also continue to drive growth with our new Tegaderm CHG dressing for IV sites, which was recently launched in both Western Europe and Brazil. Elsewhere in healthcare, we drove solid single-digit local currency growth throughout most of the portfolio. Drug delivery systems grew nicely as demand picked up for traditional inhaler fills. Oral care continued to accelerate growth, with orthodontic products showing particular strength during the quarter. And we drove mid-single-digit local currency growth in health information systems, where we recently introduced our new 3M mobile detection software for iPhone, BlackBerry, and Windows mobile platforms. Looking at sales by geography, local currency grew in all major areas, led by Latin America at 19% and Asia Pacific at 16%. Operating profits rose 13% to $347 million, and margins were just over 31%. Healthcare continues to gain recognition both from customers and with industry experts. For example, the business was recently named the number two most admired company in the medical and precision equipment space by Fortune magazine. Our oral care business once again was named most innovative dental company by the Anaheim Group. 3M Oral Care has now won this for 5 years running. And in food safety, our Clean Trace ATP system was chosen to monitor sanitation of food preparation at the 2010 World Expo in Shanghai. Healthcare continues to exemplify innovation at 3M. That concludes my review of our business segments, so now I will turn it back to George.
Thank you very much, Pat. Well, let's take a look now at the remainder of the year. I like being on this side of the gradient a lot better than I did the other. But in reality, the forecasting risk is no easier when you have very large growth rates than when you have very large contractions. But I'll do my best to demystify for you what's happening. There's certainly a lot of forward momentum in our sales volume, but the big unknown is how this will play out in the coming quarters. We also saw good sales growth in the fourth quarter. We can think of one observation being a data point, two being a trend, and three or more to me is a pattern. So I think we're close to seeing whether this growth is in fact a pattern or just a temporary aberration of the way the economy is dealing with recovery. Perhaps we had inventory others didn't, or we could finance it where others couldn't. A pessimist might argue that it will slip back as growth normalizes and credit availability improves. An optimist could argue, once won, the shares is ours to lose, not ours to win. I've read comments in the news media that anyone now doubting a strong US recovery is silly. As Voltaire said, doubt may be uncomfortable, but certainty is far more ridiculous. There's nothing magical about where demand comes from. It comes only when and from where people or companies spend money. We observe increased order flow in long cycle companies, which gives us more optimism now on the likelihood of sustainability. New housing starts in the United States increased in March by about 20% year over year to an annualized rate of 626,000, which is also 1.6% up on February. Non-transportation related durable goods orders rose by about 3%, and we saw that in some of the appliance makers' results. US autos were the best performers and improved by 21%, a much more helpful number, but still off a low base. The total sales from these factors are only a bit more than $100 billion annually, hardly a big stimulus in the US. In contrast to these gains, US commercial construction will probably still get worse before it gets better. Now, do I expect capital spending in telecoms or electric utilities to increase in the immediate future? In summary, I don't think we should look to the US for a big recovery in 2010. More likely, it's going to be a slow, patchy, and gradual recovery, punctuated by periods of occasional economic backsliding. Unemployment rates falling will logically be the genesis of any sustained US recovery, and productivity gains have sucked up a lot of any increased demand. So we retain the right to be cautious in this period of uncertainty while driving for much more growth as we can get meantime as conditions unfold. But just because we're cautious and conservative doesn't mean we won't and can't drive for good growth. We've already shown that. Fortunately, by far the biggest piece of our recovery is coming from overseas markets, substantially, but not only, in emerging markets. It's also coming from large developed Asian economies such as Korea, Taiwan, and even Japan. Japan's sales grew in the first quarter by 35%, and by 38% in March. So the hope for overseas growth is still much better than the United States. Demand at this rate is likely to be maintained at least until the middle of the second quarter. Inventory transients took about two quarters to settle in the downward economic slide. The dynamics are probably bi-directional. So that element of growth might subside in early Q3. H1N1 demand is also cooling, as Pat said, and we'll face a 1.5% growth headwind for that in the second half, though I also believe improved industrial demand will offset some of that anticipated decline, and new low-cost products will help too. High material and wage costs in the second half are also a factor. For your information, US PPI increased by 6% year over year in the first quarter. Then you have the simple arithmetic issue of harder year-over-year comps in the second half. This argues for a conservative stance in the second half, at least for now. The main point, however, is that no matter what shape the recovery takes, 3M's in a much stronger position to outpace economic growth than we ever were, even one short year ago. Our forecast of when the turn would come was very accurate, and that avoided the need to overreact. We never pulled back on investing in the future, and that has to be helping. So let me address our outlook for the year. With a strong first quarter behind us, we're raising our full year 2010 expectations. We now believe that organic sales growth will come in between 10 and 12% versus a prior expectation of 5 to 7%. That is almost doubling our forecast sales growth rate. We also expect that earnings per share will fall somewhere with the demand of $5.40 to $5.60 on an adjusted basis versus the prior expectation of $4.90 to $5.10. We anticipate that operating margins will return to the 22% plus level for the year, which is a level we last saw in 2007. So the business has really responded well coming out of the recession. The 2010 tax rate, excluding the Medicare Part D charge, is expected to be less than or equal to 28%. And finally, weighted average shares outstanding should fall somewhere between 723 million and 727 million for 2010 in total. And that concludes our formal comments today, and we'd be happy now to address your questions. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone keypad. You'll hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. If you are using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. Please limit your participation to one question and one follow-up. One moment, please, while we compile the Q&A roster. Our first question comes from the line of Scott Davis. Please proceed. Of Morgan Stanley, please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Good morning, Scott.
It's a pretty big core growth number you put together there.
Well, we thought it was pretty good, Scott.
About 3 years of growth in one quarter. Anyways, a couple things, guys. You didn't spend a whole lot of time in the presentation talking about use of this free cash flow, and you know, you're sitting very nicely on a fairly large cash balance, and you're obviously have some dry powder there. I mean, what's out there? I mean, you've got a little bit of share count slippage in your forecast. I mean, is there anything holding you back from buying back shares, or is that just a reflection of how strong the M&A environment could potentially be for you this year?
Scott, obviously that's a very, very good question. And I guess the way we're thinking of it is, of course, funding all of our growth opportunities is the highest priority for the company. You look at our results and our returns. That's obviously what we think is the best payback for the shareholders, and we think the long-term growth prospects for the company. So we'll continue to obviously push the organic side of it. We did indicate that we're going to increase some of our investment programs and the like. But importantly, we are active in the M&A market. We haven't announced anything. We are looking at a fair amount of deals that are in the pipeline. Neither George or I feel compelled, though, to be pushed, okay, to utilize the cash that we have inappropriately. So we will remain our cautious selves as we always have been and always will be. But we are looking at a number of deals across our businesses, probably more focused internationally than our recent track record would lead you to believe. Of course, part of it is we do have more cash outside the U.S. and much more of our cash generation capabilities outside the United States. And we think we have just huge growth potentials outside the United States as well. We've made a number of small strategic deals in home care that we talked about and the like. And so we're prospecting for those across the globe as we speak. But I would guess it'll be more like the second half of the year before you would see, much relative to anything of size.
Scott, also be assured that this is, we'll follow the same pattern that we always have. It's likely to be close to core. It'll be very easily manageable. I don't think Pat or I see any hugely disruptive or blockbuster acquisitions. And when you look behind these numbers, one thing that perhaps we didn't emphasize as strongly as we might have done is we've got a lot of places in these new advanced technology that we've released, Scott, that where the capacity has just been mopped up immediately. So we do have some pretty good internal choices, although they obviously are small relative, in spend terms they are, relative to some of the things that you're speaking about. So all in all, I think that, you know, the situation gives us great choices, and we'll develop that as the year unfolds.
Sure. Guys, as a follow-on, I mean, you know, your Asia-Pacific growth numbers, you know, 47%, big, big numbers. And if I was to make one critique of the last several years, I would say that I thought your Asia-Pacific growth was a little, or China in particular, a little bit disappointing versus the potential. Obviously, we've inflected up there. I mean, what do you kind of attribute that to? I mean, is there a wider rollout of SKUs? Is it capacity? Is it sales? I mean, what do you kind of attribute the that inflection point in emerging markets?
Well, we've been building plants, Scott, there, you know, the last few years. So there's no question having locally available capacity is part of the issue. And I think you know that we've followed a China for China strategy. We don't use China as an export source. The other thing is that starting you know, really about a year ago, we began to hire a lot of extra people, put a lot of extra money. We have growth expansion plans in industrial, in consumer and office, in medical. And so the money has been put to work, Scott, and now we're beginning to see some of the opportunity coming through. So we're actually in the process of a reorganization where we can get even closer contact with the market. And I think clearly the numbers demonstrate, but I think the future holds just wonderful prospects for that part of the world. And we're doing the same in India and in Russia too, Scott. You know, we're building a new lab there, and I said in our last quarter conference call, that has turned out to be for us, the lab has turned out to be an absolute money-back guarantee on growth. So I think it's reasonable to expect that this will continue, notwithstanding any other issues that China itself may have as an economy.
Yeah, I guess, Scott, that was the piece I was going to pick up on, was that I think the piece that we really have started to see a lot of traction on is our local lab capability in places like China have really started to develop a lot of new product ideas. So you mentioned SKUs and so forth, that we're getting a lot of new products out of our, we'll call it our developing market lab organizations these days, to get products that are more appropriate for the markets.
Well, obviously something's working, so congrats, guys.
Thanks.
I'll step off. Thanks.
Our next question comes from the line of Jeff Sprague of Vertical Research Partners. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Jeff.
George, you know, as you said, there's a lot of different things, and it's maybe hard to totally deconstruct, you know, the magnitude of your outperformance. But I wonder if you could elaborate on the idea that you or Pat alluded to, I don't recall now, that, you know, competitors cut perhaps too far and were left flat-footed by this. And, you know, clearly they will try the rebound, but I guess just thinking about the competitive dynamics, what can you do to try? I guess two things. How big of an impact do you think that was, and what can you do to extend that lead now that you've established it in a few key areas?
Well, I even made the sort of comment, Jeff, that this violates my engineering training of trying to determine a small number by subtracting the difference in two large numbers, both of which have got either errors or variability in them. So it's really hard to get down at those numbers, and it's especially muddy, Jeff, when you see the huge number of markets we serve and the huge number of products. So everything ends up being a little bit of this and a little bit of that. But, you know, we are seeing some competitors getting weaker. I think one of the, you know, it's I really want to try to do my level best to impress on you the hugely significant change in the way that we've gone to market here, in particular in the optical business. In the old days, we tended to serve the OEM markets. We were a little bit disconnected, if we're fair, from the set manufacturers in particular. We have altered that completely. We've gone right to the end markets. We've reestablished trust, and I think in the end, most of these guys, Jeff, They believe in us. They believe that this is the place where the innovation is coming. You know, those 3D products you've seen coming out into the market, this is stuff that's being innovated by 3M. The even the facilitating of some of this LED technology is being facilitated by 3M. So one thing which is very, very different here is the relationship between us and our customers. And I'm hoping, of course, one can never be certain, I'm hoping that what that does is secure, and at least maybe in some cases, if we're drifting away, that we get early warnings. But I'm hard-pressed, unless Pat's got a better idea, to absolutely quantify how much of that sort of early share, shall we say, that we're grabbing. It really is very difficult for me to know the answer. We'll ponder it for you, Jeff, unless Matt or Pat have got a better off-the-top idea.
Jeff, I don't think we can give you a precise answer numerically, but we'll probably give you some, you know, more qualitative. You know, we saw going into the recession that a number of large OEMs wanted to secure a much more reliable supply chain, and we saw that really play out through last year as far as gaining new designs. We just didn't see the volume until the recovery came. And then I think the flip side is also happening now is that as the economy improves, I think there's some competitors who are having a more difficult time responding. So I think we're getting some business back on that side. But I'd say it's pretty much across, you know, many of our industrial and electronics businesses, okay, that have been very successful, you know, in gaining business there.
And a separate question, just to pick one end market to talk about, maybe if there's others you want to elaborate on, but the push into labels, what you're doing with A1, how significant is that market opportunity, and how should we think about the rollout there over the next 6 to 12 months?
Well, I think, Jeff, that market for labels is it's of the order $500 million a year, and A1's 80 million or so. So I think it's a very nice marketplace, clearly, and as you would expect, 3M's the innovator in that area. So I think it's a nice adjacency, very much core to us. It's adhesives and coating and materials science. So I think it obviously depends on the end market reaction and whether we're successful at getting competitive conversions in the marketplace. And there's some tough competition, but I think that we will be successful in that market, not only in the coming year, but I think ultimately innovation and great service is going to be the difference for us. So I think it's going to be a good market for us, Jeff.
Thanks a lot.
Our next question comes from the line of Terry Darling of Goldman Sachs. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. Congratulations, gentlemen.
Thanks, Terry.
Thank you, Terry.
Hey, I wonder if I could understand some of the pieces of guidance a little bit better and maybe come at it from a couple different angles. The first one would just be very simplistically, if you take your first quarter earnings by four, it's at the high end of guidance, but we're building momentum, March versus January, February. Can you just take us through your thinking on cadence, quarterly earnings cadence throughout throughout the year? I guess your comments would lead me to think you think that the second quarter is up from the first, but maybe the second half is down, at least as implied by the guidance there. Maybe start with that.
Hey, Terry, you're trying to trap me back into a quarterly guidance, okay, which you know we're not going to do. But let me try to give you a little bit of a flavor. You can take our first quarter, you annualize it, okay, you kind of get to the high end of the range is kind of one way of approaching it. And of course, you have some unusual thing. Q1, we got the stock option expense that hits that, okay, and we actually had a lower tax rate, okay, in Q1. Those have a tendency to kind of offset each other. But do expect that. I think our normal trend would be that Q2, Q3 are higher, okay, than Q1, Q4. It would kind of be a normal course of events is the way that we would see it. Now, of course, the comps are going to get, from a reporting standpoint, a little bit unusual here because, of course, the second quarter was weaker last year, Then as the year progressed, you know, at the back end of 2009, you ended up with some stronger periods. And, of course, we had a very strong performance in the back half of the year relative to H1N1 demand, both on the top line, which, you know, was a, you know, would probably impact our comps this year by about a point and a half on the back half of the year from a revenue perspective and obviously from an earnings standpoint as well. But do expect that, generally speaking, Q2, Q3, okay, should run probably a little bit ahead of Q1, and then Q4 naturally would have a tendency to fall off a little bit, you know, off of Q3, Q4. So I don't see anything that's highly unusual this year from a kind of a traditional seasonality perspective.
Okay, and then from another angle, trying to trying to understand what's implied in the incremental margins and guidance. And if I take the high end of the range and kind of, on EPS and kind of the low end of the range on organic, and I kind of look at what the incrementals are implied for the rest of the year versus 2Q versus 4Q of last year, it kind of looks like, you know, 17-20% incremental margins. You mentioned a couple of the factors in there, and I just want to make sure I'm clear on what you've changed on some of these items. I think I heard you say you're taking R&D up $100 million versus previous.
Yeah, I guess, Terry, two things. One is let's start with the year as a total, okay? For the year, when you look at our change in our top line, bottom line, effectively, our incremental margins in that 35-40% range, which is our kind of our long-term rate that we've been running to and kind of guide to. Of course, we did a little bit better in the first, you know, in the first quarter. What we said is that some of our new growth investments will start to kick in, you know, back towards the back half, you know, back half of the year. We'd already talked about maybe $150 million going into the year. We said that we'll probably invest another $40 million or so. In George's comments, he had kind of wrapped R&D together, okay, and talked about a $100 million increase in R&D. And, of course, these new growth programs would be part of it. So that's part of the impact that will hit us on kind of an incremental basis on a going forward basis. And also remember that starting with the second quarter, we will relaunch some of our compensation-related programs like merit plans and so forth that we had kind of frozen for the last, you know, the last year or so. So if you look at the back half of the year, it's more of if you look at top line to bottom line, it's more reflective of pulling through our operating margin, okay, level is for the back half of the year.
And has anything changed on the raw material, price raw material spread assumptions?
I'd say not changed, you know, hugely. You should expect that, you know, material costs will start kicking up here in Q2 on us. But that's been in our plan. Of course, we have some very aggressive cost reduction programs on the material side as well, trying to offset as much of that as possible. So I would not put it as a significant change from our prior expectations.
And I wasn't exactly clear on the H1N1 delta. Maybe just tell us what you are now looking for that business to be down in total for the year, maybe.
Yeah, okay. I'll just kind of give you a order of magnitude. More than likely, our 2010 level will be in the $100 million range revenue. Last year, we did about 250. So, and of course, you got a significant change. It'll be first half of this year, and it really was last half of last year is when the impacts were. So you get a benefit in first and second quarter this year, and then really you get the deterioration in the back half of next year, Terry.
Terry, we had in each of the third and fourth quarter about roughly $90 to $95 million of H1N1 related sales.
Last year.
Yeah. Last year. So that's the 1.5 point drag that George referred to into the second half of this year.
Again, Terry, offset by an unknown amount of industrial betterment, which we've not factored into the numbers, but which will help lift us. And we do have a very nice new product program we're getting ready to launch that might compensate for some of that volume. So, you know, we may be being pessimistic on that, but I think we're trying to tell you the best that we know on the profile of those sales for the year.
Helpful. I'll ask one more and then get out of the way here. D&G margins were one of the big upsides here in the first quarter. if we go back historically, you know, you've gotten those as high as 30% plus. It doesn't sound like you see inventory as a problem there, George.
No.
What keeps us from continuing to track higher with those margins?
Well, first of all, you're not going to track higher because we're not going to go back to the margins that we had 3 to 5 years ago. Just the dynamics of that industry will not allow that to happen. Jerry, so I think when you look at the margins that D&G had, you know, 24% margins in that collective business is a very good, you know, a very good result. And you know, realistically, as long as the optical business, you know, maintains strong here, which we expect it to do here in the near future, we'll be able to run at those kind of rates.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks, Dan.
Our next question comes from the line of Lawrence Alexander of Jefferies & Company. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Two quick questions on your growth rate. First, as you looked at doubling your growth rate assumption for this year, how much of that change in perspective was driven by your electronics exposure? And secondly, as you think longer term, how much of the market share gains on the retail side do you think is permanent versus transitory?
Well, I guess on the retail side, we see that as being more permanent. I don't see that as being a transitory change at all, Lawrence. You know, I guess I haven't looked at the change in guidance by end market per se. If you just looked at us taking our guidance up by five points, you know, you could argue that maybe a third to 40% of that probably is kind of electronics related. That'd be a little bit higher than what our percent of our total business is, okay, in electronics. But when you look at, I think, where the growth rate and so forth is and across some of our businesses, that'd probably be a kind of a more of an order of magnitude number, Lawrence.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Bob Cornell of Barclays Capital. Please proceed with your question.
Morning, everybody.
Hey, Bob, welcome back.
Yeah, well, thanks. You know, he had to put up a good quarter for me. I appreciate it. Now, I think we get the message. You know, the buck 40 was great, you know, and the guidance may have an element of caution in it. The, you know, I guess a lot of questions have been asked. I would say in terms of the pyramid pricing, you mentioned traffic as, you know, one business has benefited from the pyramid pricing strategy, and maybe you could just comment just broadly across the portfolio how much you saw there.
Well, I don't have a complete number for the pyramid as a whole. As George said, we're trying to dissect, you know, the pieces. George, do you want to come in?
I was just going to say one number we calculated for last year. We thought that about $200 million of additional sales were coming from this manage the pyramid strategy. Of course, we'd only just started, and you can imagine, Bob, that this is a kind of stepwise strategy for us. We have many more areas that we can attack. So it's and I think the thing that's been so nice is that we haven't seen deteriorating margins. We've managed to sort of get the cost on those products right, and the pricing expectations are being, I think, well managed. So I don't know if we should expect that to be double this year, you know, up to 400, but I think it gives you some kind of sighting shot on what contribution it makes to our numbers this year.
Yeah, I agree. Looks like you guys are doing a lot right. Looking forward to following.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Our next question comes from the line of Steven Winoker of Bernstein. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Good morning,
Steve. First question is around the exceptional growth in Asia-Pac. So it was down 26% last year in core growth, up 46% first quarter this year. How much of that was optical systems? I know optical systems doubled in total, but if you sort of looked at it within Asia-Pac, I'm trying to get a sense for how much of Asia-Pacific was really optical related.
Well, we'll have to probably pull that out. Yeah. Do you guys happen to know, and we can call you back, you know, specifically on that, Steve. But,
okay, all right. Let me move on to the next question then. And within the healthcare margins, they hit 31.1, and I know you've talked about reinvestment in the second half overall and a lot of the costs coming back historically. Can you comment on how you continue? I mean, is your vision for margins in that business, you know, completely consistent with where you guys were when you talked about it in the last 4 or 5 months?
Yeah, I think it is, Steve. You know, what we've said is that over a long-term period of time, that business, you know, may be in the high, you know, the high 20s. It's a great business. And the more volume they get, you know, it's a very profitable business. So it's able to maintain a 30%, you know, type margin without really starving it. You know, what we're hoping to do is over time that what we can do is find additional, you know, growth investments in that business, which may bring its margins down. But I don't anticipate that's going to happen overnight. You know, that'd be more of a gradual, you know, a gradual change. As compared to a, you know, kind of a one quarter movement, it's really a, you know, that's a fantastic business, and if you just do the math, it's pretty hard to bring that margin down if you've got any kind of growth, you know, growth going on at all.
Sorry,
Steve. I was going to say behind the scenes, there's a lot of work going on moving that business, obviously protecting the core that we have, but moving that business to an even more advanced footing. You know, so we're looking at investments in advanced wound care, a lot of work on using very advanced mathematics for diagnostics, taking extracting signals from some of the devices we have and using that. So we're doing some internal development on that and looking at least one or possibly two acquisitions in that area. So I think what you're going to see is a kind of a bit of a technological mix-up, more electronics, more software, more mathematics that will augment the great businesses we already have. And actually even in some senses kind of repositioning that business a little bit, taking on various areas of healthcare, in particular various areas of the hospital, you know, operating theatres and so on and so forth, and putting together a fully integrated set of products, a suite of products, to meet all of the needs that, consumable needs in particular, that are in those areas. So I think the strategy is beginning to unfold. The steps are being taken, Steve. It's a bit of a watch this space, but I've given you kind of a little bit of a preview of some of the ways, places that we're thinking in this business. Pat's right, I think, you know, you're going to see margins, I don't see them dropping below the high 20s, but for a time we will spend more money in that, and hopefully this will remain for many, many years one of the just the great businesses of 3M. It's a wonderful, wonderful business.
Hey, Steve, right? It's Matt. On your first question, you know, historically, a few years ago, virtually all the growth in Asia was optical for a while, but this quarter it was quite balanced. Optical was probably a little under a third of the growth in Asia Pacific, and the remainder was really spread across the rest of the portfolio.
Okay, fantastic. And on pricing, given the big snapback, you talked about it a little bit. I mean, what kind of pricing pressures or desperation are you seeing as volume comes back from the competitive set and you guys are actually facing across the businesses?
Steve, I wouldn't characterize it at all as any kind of an abnormal, you know, abnormal pressure. I think, you know, part of course, what you're seeing is, I think demand has snapped back so rapidly here in Q1 in a number of spaces. The biggest concern we've had with suppliers, I think others have had, is supply, you know, supply capability as much as anything right now. And I think once you get the supply system where it needs to be, then obviously you can get into price discussions. But right now, I think the biggest concern a lot of us have is can we get product?
Okay. And your answer to that? Well, as you look forward and plan to grow?
I mean, we're planning kind of a flat pricing environment for the year this year, Steve, and we haven't changed that view.
Okay. And lastly, on the R&D front, I know you increased spending of $100 million. Sales was so far ahead of that, though, that you faced a lower percentage of sales on that. As you look forward and sort of temper the growth rates a little bit, your overall R&D spending? Is it that you just don't have, I mean, would you spend more if you had the right projects at this point? How do you think about funding that? You talked about the $40 million of new investments. How should we think about that?
Well, we have the at the beginning of the year, we have a process where we look not only at the R&D spend, but new business development spend. And, you know, we obviously try to make a balanced judgment on how much extra we're going to invest to make sure that we don't damage the overall numbers. So it's a little bit of a sort of a baby bear balancing act. So we have the ideas, and what we chose to do in this first quarter, because things were so strong, is we accelerated the investment. That pattern, I think, is likely to continue during the year. If this thing stays very, very strong, we'll see what else we can do to reinvest, knowing full well that this is an accelerant to our growth. It would cost us something in the near term, but would be very, very powerful for us in the long term. So I don't think you should think that we are out of ideas. In fact, it's the complete opposite. It's one of the real changes in the company as it's really gained traction in this reinvigoration of R&D, that these wonderful new ideas are all over the place, and it's just a question of us prioritizing funding while at the same time balancing what we do for the market.
Great. Thank you. Fantastic.
Thanks
Steve.
Yep. And our last question comes from the line of Stephen Tusa of J.P. Morgan. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
You talked about some of the temporary costs coming back in into the second quarter. I mean, is that significant, or maybe if you could just flush it out a bit?
I guess, Steve, I don't see it as being significant. It's obviously manageable within the size of our business, and obviously taken into consideration in our guidance for for the year. I think on the comp side, it's about 4 to 5 cents. I think on a quarterly basis is kind of what we're probably putting back into the system. But we can manage it.
Okay. And then as far as the earnings bridge you guys gave at the beginning of the year, which is always very helpful, aside from the obvious things you've already talked about, like price cost and some of the organic dynamics, is there anything else in there that's changing in that bridge?
I'd say the big change, Steve, has really been the volume side. If you go back to our December meeting or other conversations we've had, is the biggest change in that whole waterfall really has been on the volume side of the equation.
Okay. And then just one last question on the level of growth you saw in the first quarter. Maybe this is just because it's picked up in the back half of the year. But seasonally, the first quarter relative to the fourth quarter has, at least as things pick up kind of, if you just look back at from 2003 to 2007, the average increase has been about 4%, and the sequential increase this quarter was about 4%. Obviously the comp is tremendously easy, and I'm not discounting the growth rates. I mean, the growth rates were off the charts year over year, no doubt about it. Are we missing something there? Is there another reason? Is there another way we should look at this to judge how strong it is, to judge kind of the progression of the economy here?
No, I guess, and you got an appropriate comment if you look at kind of, year over year and so forth from a comp standpoint. But, Steve, and really coming off of fourth quarter, you have to remember that fourth quarter was actually a good quarter for us. We had, very decent quarter, especially vis-a-vis any kind of the economic indicators and the like. So, we've seen, good sequential change in our business, and actually what makes us feel good about actually increasing our guidance for the whole year is really the rate of change that we've had in our business. So I don't see there was anything unusual there at all.
Okay, and then one last question, I guess, just the progression for the rest of the year. Obviously, another good second quarter coming on the organic side, and you gave a slide, I guess, last conference call talking about the second half growth rate of 2 to 4%. Are there any, are you bumping up the back half, the second half as well? I'm just curious as to the progression of the organic growth through the rest of the year.
Yeah, well, Steve, you, of course.
And is the fourth quarter positive?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it should be positive, okay? And I just want to remind you, the back half of the year, as Matt had pointed out, H1N1, we'd have a kind of a headwind of about a point and a half in the back half of the year, but it will be positive. You know, if you take our guidance and you kind of extrapolate it, it implies kind of a 7 to 10%, you know, growth rate through the back half, you know, back half of the year. I guess you can kind of anticipate just because of the comps, it'll probably be a little bit better in the second quarter than it is in the back half of the year. But, you know, that's how we're thinking of the business.
Okay, so that 2 to 4 goes up, obviously.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Great quarter.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Okay, thank you very much, everybody. We'll close our call right now. Thank you very much for listening. We very much appreciate the time you spent with us. And we look forward to talking to you again next quarter. Thanks, everybody.